Brad Hayes, associate professor of political science, Union College, and a brilliant, brilliant man, I have to say. I want to ask you first about Donald Trump going on Saturday Night Live. Now, what do you get from doing that?
I guess not a lot of laughs. Ha-ha.
No, that's right. You didn't get a lot of laughs.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, there's been some commentary about this being the free publicity campaign. In other words, that candidates, particularly on the Republican side because of the larger field, ostensibly, have been doing more and more to try to grab the nation's attention, right? So we see this where candidates who are willing to say or do something that's kind of outlandish, they get more attention and at least seemingly more support in the polls. So we've seen this with Trump, the whole Trump phenomenon, and I think we've seen it more recently with Ben Carson.
Now, the FCC has said, Brad Hayes, that there is an equal time issue here, and they expect that equal time will be given to all the other gazillions of Republican candidates.
That would be a problem for humor. I don't know.
I mean, that would be the end of ratings for Saturday Night Live forever, probably.
It would take some really great writing, I think. Some great acting coaches, something. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, this, I guess that's one of the downsides of the equal time rule or things like this. But I think the part of the problem we're talking about humor, right, is that while some people are sort of funny in the campaign cycle, right? In other words, they have zingers, they're able to capture the audience in debates. Some of them aren't, right? And this is, I think, where we've seen some real failings among some of the candidates, right? There's been some work in political science. In fact, there was an op-ed that was published in the New York Times a few days ago by Patrick Stewart, who's a professor at the University of Arkansas, where he looks at humor, right, in politics, and he kind of measures humor in relationship to prestige. And he finds that, the humorous candidate often has increased prestige. And it's kind of, you'd say, well, why would that be? Well, in some ways, it shows a certain kind of leadership, right? That you're able to maintain your cool, your collective, be composed in the face of maybe some aggression and deflect that in a way that is humorous.
So name a Republican candidate who could do that.
Well, I mean, so somewhat Trump obviously has done that quite a bit. He gets quite a bit of the chuckles in the crowd.
So after him.
Surprisingly, people have found Ben Carson quite humorous.
Really?
I have that same kind of reaction.
I mean, but if I were Saturday Night Live, I could write a humorous skit for Ben Carson, but it wouldn't be a stand-up comedy skit.
Yeah, I don't quite get it necessarily, but that I think, his, some of his responses, people have found humorous and maybe that's just the they're kind of conservative jokes to conservatives, evangelical jokes to evangelicals. But yet if that is part of your constituency that you want to see you as the better candidate, then that seems to make an impact. It seems to move the needle. So for things like Saturday Night Live, that may be in some ways a different kind of forum for humor, but you can in some ways see why candidates might want to try these things as a way of appearing both as somebody that might have more prestige on the stage against their fellow candidates, but also as somebody that might win that who you want to have a beer with contest, right? That we often will talk about as well in politics is being able to appear as if you're a regular schmo, and in that kind of a question, who'd you rather have beer with? It often is the candidate that wins. So there it is.
There you go. Right. Let's talk about the Keystone Pipeline. The people who run it said we're not even apply for it. We want to let it rest. But then out comes President Obama, and he says, I've decided against allowing it. Could you give us a little bit of background on that?
Well, I mean, I think for Obama, you're probably looking at like a legacy issue, right? That in some ways he's trying to shore up his legacy as an environmental president, and he has done some remarkable things in that regard. You can think about the agreement with China to reduce fossil fuel consumption, which was really, really notable. And I think maybe in some ways this was very much an effort on his part to shore up that legacy domestically, even though maybe it didn't need to be done, as I think you're pointing out. He wanted to kind of make that declaration
sort of a freebie for him, right?
Yeah, I think so. A freebie in the sense that it was an easy one, since it almost had been taken off the table. But yet there are costs, right? That this will continue to be a campaign issue in part because of that statement. Now, it doesn't cost him directly, but it may in fact end up featuring prominently in the next presidential campaign, which does in some ways affect his legacy, because obviously he wants the Democratic candidate to win so as to protect many of his executive endeavors.
Well, do you see a point at which the pipeline, the XL pipeline, would ever become, you know, the people's choice? It may be prominent in the election. I mean, I don't see that happening. You know, you get the stuff, the dirty oil coming down through the United States, going to the southern ports and being shipped somewhere else. What do we get from it?
Yeah, well, I mean, because it could go to the refineries down there and then get shipped back into the United States, I suppose.
But doesn't seem to be what they're saying is going to happen.
No, I mean, so that's how it happens, right? So what you do is you reconfigure it, right? I mean, I think if you were to plan the campaign, you would say, well, look, the oil is going to go there anyway. You know, we're talking about either shipping it via rail to barge, and it's going to go down to the refineries anyway. And it has a larger carbon signature that way. And that, you know, then we'll distribute it domestically, you know, however you want to formulate it. You know, that might have greater saliency to certain voters. So I mean, there might be ways to do it, but, you know, this has certainly set it back significantly.
Okay. We've seen some off-year election results. A rare GOP gubernatorial win in Kentucky, and we only have a minute.
Yeah, so I mean, I never know what to make of these kind of off-year things in terms of thinking about them for the future. I mean,
the Kentucky governor is way out there. He's way out there.
Yeah, he is. And I mean, and this is the thing about that is that he ran with one of his major issues being Obamacare. Kentucky had set up a really successful, really notable healthcare exchange. They had extended Medicaid coverage, and he campaigned on undoing that, and was successful. So, I mean, it does speak to a certain extent to the continuing difficulty that the Affordable Care Act has had in gaining popular support. Yeah. Even though it seems to be doing most of the things it was advertised to do, it is still quite unpopular. And candidates can run against it.
And middle-class voters particularly eat it up.
Yes.
Always great to talk to our very good friend, Brad Hayes, associate professor of political science at Union College, and a guy who thinks about all of this for all of us. And we thank you so much, Brad, for being with us.
It's always a great pleasure to be here, Alan. Thank you.